This evening, like I mentioned earlier, we're going to be talking about the Eightfold Path. And this follows last month's discussion of the Four Noble Truths. So the fourth of the Four Noble Truths is the Eightfold Path. And so after the first three of the Four Noble Truths are, there's dukkha, the truth of dukkha. There's the cause of dukkha, the clinging. There's the ending of dukkha, the letting go of the clinging. And there's the path that we follow in that regard. So the Eightfold Path is divided into three groups. The first one is panya. That's the Pali term meaning wisdom. Second is sila. That again, Pali term, which is ethical behavior, morality, warm-heartedness, that kind of the heart practice of the path. And the third area is samadhi. And the translation, to English is concentration. It also includes mindfulness, paying attention, the, collectedness of mind, a steadiness of mind. And these three groups, these three areas, panya, sila, and samadhi, they're like three legs of a stool. They're three aspects of the path are mutually related and supportive of each other. And so I'll start giving an overview of the Eightfold Path and then go into some depth, specifically on the wisdom aspect or panya component. And then afterwards, we have a break, Lauren will continue this discussion with the other two aspects of the Eightfold Path, the ethical behavior and the concentration area. So here we are, we're born here, during this time, during this, in this place. And we're all trying to make sense of our own lives. We're all on some sort of path. And it can be baffling sometimes and confusing. And we kind of ask the question, how can I navigate life? Where am I going? How do I get from here to there? And well, if you're on a path, and you're trying to find your way, it's important to know where you are to begin with. And then where you want to go. What's the starting point and which direction do you want to head? I like quoting Yogi Berra on this talk. He says, if you don't know where you're going, you'll end up someplace else. So this Eightfold Path is a way of knowing where we are and where we're going. Because it's also important to know where we begin. We aren't going to know where to go if we don't know our starting point. You can't use a GPS or Google Maps to get us somewhere if we don't have the starting point. So the Eightfold Path offers that as well. The Eightfold Path offers us a place to begin and a clear guidance for traveling through life. And like us, Buddha was on his own life's journey about 2,600 years ago, back in northern India, area of northern India. And the Eightfold Path described by the Buddha is the result of his very own exploration. So I'm going to kind of walk us through or take a quick look at the path that the Buddha took. And I imagine this is pretty familiar to a lot of you. And the Buddha started out as a pretty privileged life as a prince. Again, living in the area that's northern India, it's just a very comfortable life in a palace. Sometimes I think, well, he's probably didn't have air conditioning and probably didn't have car to get around. I'm sure he didn't. But it was certainly comfortable in those times. So he was a protected environment, yet this did not bring lasting contentment. And so he ventured out. Like us, we try something. Well, what if this isn't working? Try something else. So we ventured from the palace and started seeing the reality of life outside of the palace, the sickness, aging, death. He saw a traveling sadhu, a holy man. And seeing all this, he was inspired to pursue a spiritual life, to leave the palace life behind and venture out and live a life of an ascetic, basically denying his body pleasure and comfort that he was experiencing and hoping that that might lead to some sort of spiritual awakening or lasting contentment. Well, he did that, but that didn't work either. He then realized that the extremes weren't the path towards contentment, and he ended up proceeding to follow a middle path between the extreme of indulgence and asceticism. And ultimately, he merged with this clarity and a view of the nature of things that he summarized in the Four Noble Truths, as well as the three characteristics, which we also talked about in the Buddhist Essentials class about anicca, dukkha, and anatta, that is, the impermanence of things are impermanent, conditional things are impermanent, and suffering is caused by our clinging to them, and also clinging to our sense of self. And so he sees this. It's a clear view for him. And on this basis, he taught, proceeded to talk about two things, the suffering and the suffering in regard to how he saw things on this journey. And so he invited us to check it out, to see for ourselves. And that's what we're doing these days. That's what we're doing tonight. So likewise, like the Buddha, you know, like I say, we're kind of on the journey ourselves. And we encounter difficulties, suffering, hardships, difficulties, sickness, aging, death, the pandemic, racial and social inequities, injustice, different social suffering. Climate change is one thing that we're confronting these days. And of course, basic physical and economic challenges, which is kind of the norm and range in severity, depending on our privileged or non-privileged conditions. So as we try and navigate this, basically what we try to do is find some sort of reasonable amount of peace and happiness. So in response to these normal conditions of life, we come up with a view. We have a take on it. We have a perspective. Start developing a strategy about how do I navigate the difficulties? How do I do this? And pretty much everybody does. How we view things is going to determine how we operate in the world. If we view things that, oh, it's all about having fun, excitement, adventures, we're going to be pursuing life in that regard. If we see winners and losers, I'm going to be a winner, you're going to be a loser, or vice versa. We're going to pursue life in that, with that view. Or if we see things that we're all in this together, in a kind of sharing, mutual support, that view is going to guide our lives. Some people may be unclear about a view and maybe, you know, basically kind of confused and unsure about how to navigate life. I thought about a number of different views as I was doing this talk. And one is Vince Lombardi, a football coach of the Green Bay Packers of Wisconsin. That's where I grew up. It was a football team I knew back then. His view was winning isn't everything. It's the only thing. So a view like that, you can imagine what are his actions? It's, I got to win at all costs. Everything I do, all I pay attention to is to that end. So some views lead to happiness more than others. And Buddha was offering guidance of one that he thought would likely lead to more enduring happiness. A typical strategy in conventional lives and amongst ourselves and family and friends, you know, is pretty typical, is basically seek out all the pleasant stuff, the pleasant bits. Try to get away from, try to avoid, try to navigate around all the challenges and difficulties. It can work to a certain degree, but it's unreliable. And just like trying to deal with changing weather, it's not going to work very well. We can't rely on comfort and pleasure as a lasting means of happiness and satisfaction in life if these things are changing conditions. Which again brings us back to the Buddhist offering of the fourth of the Noble Truths and Eightfold Path. So the fourth Noble Truth, the Eightfold Path, is again three components: Panya, wisdom. There's three parts to this. There's right view. Right view, they should say, right view or wise view, and wise intention. And that's basically the outcome, the expression of the first Noble Truths. Second is sila, ethical behavior. Three aspects here, and Lauren's going to get into this. Speech, action, and livelihood. Right speech, right action, right livelihood. Doing this, other people don't have reasons to fear you. We're not going to have regrets if we're confident in this path in that regard. And the third is samadhi, concentration, the mindfulness, the paying attention aspect, the effort that goes into recognizing what's going on and being awake. It verifies the results of our actions and informs wisdom and panya. So I mentioned right and wise. Basically, it's not like a dogma. This is right, you're wrong, but rather in what gets you where you want to go. What is a wise way to go here? Like going down towards, how do I get across town? I'll take I-90 and head over the bridge. It gets you where you want to go. So that's the wise way to go. So these three components, panya, sila, and samadhi, are like three legs of a stool. And sometimes people talk, it's almost like a weave. They're interconnected. It's like a weave. So they are developed together. They're complementary, mutually supportive. The view sets the stage. Intention follows view. Speech and actions align with intentions. And a steady mindfulness keeps us conscious and aware so we can act with our best intentions and not just act out of reactive conditioning. So two wisdom factors of the Eightfold Path are right view and right intention, and often called wise view, wise intention. While all eight of the elements of the Eightfold Path work together and are interrelated, wise view sets the cornerstone of our entire practice. It's the foundation. Wise view includes the understanding of the Four Noble Truths, the suffering and the end of suffering, which I mentioned earlier, impermanence, not self, causes and conditions. All these teachings that arose out of the Four Noble Truths. So the wisdom leg of this three-legged stool is the foundation of the practice. It includes a beginning point, a view of where we're going, an intention to travel that path. So if you imagine, this is the view you're looking for. This is what's going to frame how you're going to act. This is why it's important as a foundation. Everything flows from our view. Our perceptions, how we see things, are derived from our view. If our view is distorted or unwise, so will our actions. So will our mindfulness. It'd be like having astigmatism or nearsightedness or farsightedness. With view, which is distorted, is going to distort how we see things. If our self-view is self-centered or self-oriented, if our view of life is I'm here, you're out there, we'll make assumptions about that. We'll see that in separation. We'll see ourselves being separated. As I think about it, I thought about, Donald Trump came to mind as one example. And I don't want to mean this as a politically, you want to look at this politically, but just someone who had a very strong view of life and saw happiness achieved through wealth, power, control, fame, winners, losers. Vince Lombardi, winning is the only thing. Views like this are going to guide actions and how one sees the world. Mindfulness in this regard is, am I winning or am I losing? Carl Sagan has, he was an astrophysicist, and he wrote something about a view, which I found a lot more helpful. Carl Sagan, you know, like I say, he worked quite a bit with NASA and the space program, and he was involved in the Voyager mission. And the Voyager mission sent a couple of satellites out into space, exploring the outer planets of Neptune, of Saturn and Pluto and Neptune and Uranus and beyond. And as they're heading out, in particular the Voyager 1, Carl Sagan asked the cameras to be turned around and pointed back at the Earth and take a picture. And the picture that it took was of the Earth, a pale blue dot in a field of many, many, many other dots. It was hard to locate this dot. And he said, it gave perspective. It was a view. He said, look again at that dot. That's here. That's home. That's us. On it, everyone you love, everyone you know, everyone you ever heard of, every human being, whoever was, lived out their lives. The aggregate of our joy and suffering, thousands of confident religions, ideologies, economic doctrines, every hunter and forager, every hero and coward, every creator, destroyer of civilizations, every king and peasant, every young couple in love, every mother and father, hopeful child, inventor, explorer, every teacher of morals, every corrupt politician, every superstar, every supreme leader, every saint and sinner in the history of our species, live there on a mote of dust suspended in a sunbeam. That perspective, to me, it just says how much more we are alike and are sharing a space than how divided we are. And I appreciate that view. So Buddha's view is the Four Noble Truths, Eightfold Path, suffering and the end of suffering. With wise view as a cornerstone, wise intention follows naturally. And wise intention can be summarized as pretty simply as recognizing our connectedness, like Carl Sagan, and living a life for my welfare, the welfare of others, and leading to peace. So with this, we have an interest in and wanting to end suffering for ourselves and others, a caring and sense of connectedness to others, an intention about what we say and do, an intention about what we incline our minds and hearts towards. So all aspects of the Eightfold Path work together. Wise view and intentions guide and inform our speech and actions. Mindfulness, steadiness of mind, and wise effort keep us attentive to the path while clarifying, reinforcing, and increasing faith and wisdom and sila, and following the path towards awakening. Acting with the good intentions and being mindful of effects furthers wisdom for future actions. So that's kind of the framework. But I see this as more than just kind of theory, more than just kind of something for me. Like I say, we're involved in a lot of different challenges in life. So I found this practice to be very helpful in my life. But over the years, it's resulted in a lot less suffering, less distress in my life, helped in my relationships, less clinging to views and opinions, less reactivity, less reactiveness, and more responsiveness in speaking and doing. But I also start realizing how narrowly I've been holding this practice. You know, going on meditation retreats, self-oriented, looking inward, all good. But these days, now that I'm just having an increasing awareness of the current state of affairs. You know, the systemic racism that we see, you know, again and again on TV. Issues of social and economic injustice, climate change, all that, the effects of that, the pandemic, all the ways that we're interrelated, interconnected, that suffering's all around us. And I'm beginning to reflect more about how Buddhist teachings and wise intention, action, speech, mindfulness, and effort apply to me in relationship to these, all these important issues. So I start wondering, how can I apply this? How can I use this view in recognizing the current state of affairs? How can I use this path of the view, the intention, and the actions and mindfulness that really leads to my welfare and the welfare of others and leading to peace? I'll let it go at that. Thanks for your attention. Let's just sit for 1.5 minute here. And allow the words to settle. For my welfare, welfare of others, leading to peace. That's what we're doing.